Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
We keep having to talk about COVID here on the podcast. I'm Chris Graham. And the latest from the governor-elect's transition team is that Governor-elect Glenn Youngkin, Republican, has announced a medical advisory team, and he vows to be, quote, smart on COVID. And his advisory team is going to be led by others. It's a nice list of people. They have great pedigrees, credentials, et cetera, et cetera. But they didn't get chosen for their pedigree. The leader of the group is a guy named Marty Makary. You look at his credentials. He's a professor of surgery at Johns Hopkins. He's the chief of the Johns Hopkins Transplant Center, the chair of their medical advisory team. And he's also known for being a regular contributor to Fox News, downing mask mandates related to COVID and vaccine mandates related to COVID. This is where we are, Virginia. This is what happens when you can't hold your nose, Democrats listening to me, and can't go out and vote for a guy just because he got money from Dominion to run for a second term. I'm talking about Terry McAuliffe there, of course. So that's where we are. We have a governor who himself is vaccinated and boosted. I presume Makary probably is too. Hell, all the credentialed people on this medical advisory team for Youngkin, I'm sure going to be people. If you ask them all, they're smart enough to have gotten their shots, their boosters. They'll get them again when the recommendations are thrown out there, but they're going to play politics with this. It's not a good look in the very here and now. And I say very here and now. Obviously, the COVID numbers are still out of control. Case numbers anyway, the Omicron variant, we're averaging 17,000 new cases per day. Hospitalizations are continuing to break records every day, which is sad to see. I know the reporting is out there that roughly half of the people who are in hospitals with COVID are there with it, not for it necessarily, which is the distinction being people in hospitals already than being tested for COVID just as a matter of procedure and safety, and then finding out that, hey, you're here for something else, but you've also got COVID, which is why, generally speaking, the number of hospital beds available has been pretty consistent the last couple of weeks, though a little bit of a dip today. And something that the outgoing governor, Ralph Northam, was trying to address with an emergency order that he issued earlier this week that allows hospitals to expand their number of staffed beds without having to go through the normal regulatory process, because it's a short-term, very immediate need in some localities particularly. But all that said, we've got a governor-elect who will be governor on Saturday, who, again, he likes to talk out of both sides of his mouth as far as this goes. He likes to, he's pointing out to the moderates who voted for him, who decided that for various reasons, Terry McAuliffe wasn't their liking, that he's vaccinated, he's boosted, he supports people making that decision for themselves. And yet we still have right-wing propagandists disguised as journalists and podcasters and everything else who are doing everything they can to make sure that at least 30% of our population never gets, vaccinated. And that's how these variants get stronger and more contagious and everything else. And it's going to be a never ending cycle if that's the case. I mean, the only good news out of this is that if it can be considered good news, the fact that this Omicron variant is so contagious, the numbers we're seeing, which are just video game-like numbers in terms of new cases per day, means that in pretty short order, everyone who's not vaccinated will have been exposed to COVID through this new variant, and they'll probably contract it, and then that could actually bring us back to endemic status. You've probably heard talk in the 2020 part of our pandemic, we're in 2022 now, which is just hard to believe that we're still talking about this. But the 2020 part of our pandemic, we talked about herd immunity. Just let everybody get it, and then we'll sort it out from there. Well, that's pretty much what's happening now. Those who've been vaccinated and boosted they're still getting it. There's still breakthrough cases, but those folks are generally speaking having very mild, if any kind of symptoms. But then those who aren't vaccinated, boosted, you're getting it. Some of you are getting it really bad. 1,600 people a day are still dying in the United States of America from COVID. The vast majority of those folks are unvaccinated. And hey, good news, in a couple of weeks, most of you who haven't been vaccinated will have gotten it. Some of you will die. That's bad news for those of you specifically, but the then this becomes endemic. So we're getting our herd immunity. It just took a couple of years. So and our governor's going to help there, because he and his attorney general-elect Jason Mayares have pledged to join the fight against vaccine mandates. We just know where that's going to get us. I mean, it all may be moot because of the fact that, you know, we still have a good percentage of our population in the 30% range who've not gotten vaccinated. This Omicron wave is going to wipe out a lot of that. So the bad news is, of course, I mean, that of course, in the individual cases, people getting really sick, some of them dying. And the strain on our hospitals, and the strain on those folks who for 2 years have been strained already. And then bad news for those unlucky among you who don't get COVID, but maybe break your leg or get in a car accident. I mean, this happened in my family. My father-in-law, 3 weeks ago, I think it was now, he had a heart attack, emergency responders had to find a place to put him. He had a heart attack from the Augusta County area, but Augusta Health and UVA were both full up. And so he had to be flown to Lynchburg, where there was limited available space to provide care. And he passed on. So not COVID directly, but COVID related, I would call that. You know, that's part of the stakes of this. This personal decision that some of you folks are making, because you've been misled into thinking that the vaccines are dangerous, impacts you, and it impacts other people. And that's the shame and bad news of it all. But that's the world we live in now. And your personal decisions, what you think are your personal decisions, impact people that you'll never meet. So that's the news. Well, that's the sobering news, but that's the reality. So, more politics news, on Augusta Free Press, just some quick highlights as we wrap up this, this quick podcast. Among the headlines today, a lot of folks clicking on a story, the outgoing Attorney General Mark Herring, the soon to be former two-term Attorney General Mark Herring, offering an advisory opinion that the incoming governor of Youngkin, incoming Attorney General Mayares, who have made it clear that withdrawing the Commonwealth from the regional greenhouse gas initiative is a top priority for them, Herring's saying they can't do that. And, you know, I'm sure that Youngkin and Mayares are going to continue to fight this battle. It's going to go to court, and we'll see how judges rule on this. But Herring's opinion, and we've had close to 10,000 people click on this story we wrote about just yesterday. The Virginia Constitution is clear. Herring says the governor does not have the authority to single-handedly repeal or eliminate a law or regulation that's been passed by the General Assembly. That's pretty much constitutional law 101 right there. We'll see from there how that goes. The RGGI is a cap and trade program that establishes a price on carbon dioxide pollution in the power sector. It's not just Virginia. Virginia is among 11 Northeastern and Mid-Atlantic states that entered this agreement in 2020. And the Virginia action part of this was enacted by the General Assembly when the General Assembly passed the Clean Energy and Community Flood Preparedness Act. So Herring is saying that when Republicans work through an executive order, which Glenn Youngkin has promised to issue on day one, to withdraw Virginia from the RGGI, you can just assume that pretty quickly, if not, I'd be surprised if the lawsuit's not already written and ready to be filed with briefs from lots of organizations ready to be filed as friends of court kind of things in the immediate seconds thereafter. But this is going to be a court fight that's going to probably take some time, cost some money, and ultimately going to work out in the favor of Virginia staying in the RGGI. So We're going to spend a lot of money fighting something that doesn't need to be fought. I think I've seen a number that Youngkin says that the average Virginian will save $52 a year on energy cost if Virginia withdraws from the RGGI. $52 a year is $4 a month. That's $1 a week to do one minor thing to forestall whatever amount of climate change we can by doing this. This may not affect you today or tomorrow, even though I would argue that it will and does. We didn't have tornadoes that killed lots of people here in Virginia last month, but our neighbors in Kentucky and Arkansas certainly did. December tornadoes that were unprecedented and deadly. We haven't had forest fires like were in Colorado in the last few weeks or in California the last few years, but we could. We have lots of forest here. These are all symptoms of we haven't been affected by hurricanes here with dramatic impact directly like the Gulf Coast has in the last few years, but we could because we have lots of coastline. These are all related to climate change, and you can pretend that saving the average Virginia taxpayer $52 a year is more important than dealing with the climate. But it's all politics is all it is. It's all making more money for their benefactors. We all know that. And last little bit of news. Hey, we're going to have some fun with this. What the heck? I'm wondering what Mitch McConnell Republicans are really threatening. You might have heard news, watched even if you perhaps did. Joe Biden, the president, yesterday very forcefully advocating for an end to the Senate rule on filibusters in the case of voting rights legislation to allow for the passage of a couple of very important voting rights protection bills. Mitch McConnell's response, let me just read the response first. If my colleague tries to break the Senate to silence those millions of Americans, we will make their voices heard in this chamber in ways that are more inconvenient for the majority in this White House than anybody has ever seen in living memory. He's going to silence millions of Americans. McConnell's words there were that voting rights legislation will somehow silence millions of Americans. That's the first part of this. Protecting people's ability to vote somehow silences millions of Americans. The second part of this is that if that happens, we will make their voices in this chamber heard in ways that are more convenient for the majority. What's he promising, an insurrection? I think we've already had one of those. That was last year's effort to fight voting rights. Instead of moderating their policies to appeal to more voters, Republicans instead are trying to adjust the scoreboard by making it harder for people who don't agree with their extremist approaches to the issues of the day to vote. That's all this is what this is. The filibuster is dumb anyway. We can all agree on that. It's not part of the Constitution. It's a rule. It's a tradition. The basics of it are if a member of the Senate promises to speak until endless debate, I will speak until the cows come home and can do so. And we've actually seen some actual lengthy filibusters where debate had to go on and on and on because there weren't 60 votes to stop it. That's what it takes, 60 votes out of the 100 in the Senate to stop a person from threatening endless debate. That's all they ended up doing now. You don't actually have the reading out of phone books or that kind of thing anymore. You just have the threat of endless debate, and that can actually stop a vote from happening. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that the Senate has that rule. And really from the common sense standpoint and the fairness standpoint, our representative democracy is a majority rule thing. We don't, the House has a 50% plus one vote rule in place. The Senate for a lot of issues does, but in this, in key issues, except for when Republicans don't want them, for example, when they're trying to block a Supreme Court nominee from being considered because we're too close to an election. And then 4 years later, they rush through a Supreme Court nominee, even though we're too close to an election. rules apply and then they're not applied. This seems like one that's easy to get to, the filibuster. In fact, not just on voting rights issues, let's just get rid of it completely. The fact that both, and honestly, Democrats have preserved this too. We want to preserve the rules of the Senate. even have Joe Manchin saying now he wants to preserve the rules of the Senate. Joe Manchin just needs to go. I mean, you know, Democrats need to stop pretending that he's part of their party. I know that would give McConnell the majority leader title back for a few months, but he's already got it as far as this goes. It sounds like to me that McConnell's threatening insurrection. And we've already seen that happen once, and we're going to see it again, unfortunately. Our democracy is fraying if it's not already completely already frayed, and we're just pretending like it's not. We may have already seen peak democracy here in the United States of America. And I'm laughing, not because I think it's funny. I'm laughing because I don't know what else to do. Hey, share your thoughts. AugustaFreePress2@gmail.com. You can go to Twitter at AugFreePress. You can DM me. You can go to Facebook. We have a very big Facebook presence. Lots of people follow us there. Go there and share your thoughts. Give me some things to feedback on. I'll be glad to do it. Thanks for your time today, everybody. And we will talk again soon.